No.
Hey there, radio fans. This is another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. This is another pirate radio edition, but this time we're joined by two staffers instead of just usually what's usually just me and Stan. This time we've got the guy who decided to go with the podcast to begin with. We've got Mike Stryker Obi Sklans with us.
Hey, I'm back from the grave, apparently.
Yes, back from the dead. And of course, as usual, we have Stan Ferguson, our great and never late sports editor.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Tonight's topic is an interesting one. We're going to be covering the Four Horsemen of the Gaming Apocalypse. Now, there are a lot of crackpot theories out there about why the video game industry is headed for failure. You know, pretty much ever since we had that big crash in 1984, it's just been on the cliff, basically just people have been waiting for it to happen again. So we're going to cover the four biggest theories as the Four Horsemen. First up is War, which is small developers being bought out by, you know, the larger publishers like, say, EA or Ubisoft, Capcom, etc. So
this is a pretty big one right now, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree. You know, fan favorite developers like, you know, Maxis, and great developers like that now are just part of a larger corporate conglomerate, I guess you could say.
Right. Fortunately, Maxis still has Will Wright, who has the power to say, yeah.
Exactly. You know, I mean, I think Will Wright can still pretty much do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
But at the same time, EA, you know, is privy to just taking the Sims franchise and basically doing whatever they want with it.
Exactly.
Thus we get, you know, 80 sequels to... Yeah, exactly. You know, we're going to be... In 10 years, we're going to have 50 more Herb sequels. Sure.
Awesome.
The Herbs busting out again.
Well, the ghetto expansion.
Don't forget the brilliant head coach
exactly.
That was released. Oh my God! Let's hope they
it's
never
a good idea for a
again.
Game.
it's a good idea as a an additional feature on Madden.
Okay, but to get back to the original topic, so what do you guys think about this? Do you think it's a probable conclusion that bigger companies just buying out small developers would really hamper the game industry?
I mean, definitely.
Yeah.
It's something like even Nintendo's sort of guilty of it when you look at, you know, Retro Studios was a nothing developer and now they're part of Nintendo, and Silicon Knights for a short period of time was not really owned by Nintendo but almost owned by Nintendo. It was
right.
like a strategic alliance, like, you know, like the Allies in World War II or something.
Right.
Exactly.
And when you also homogenize the industry, you homogenize the product, and a lot of it ends up being some of the same stuff. And when you have those small developers out there, and, you know, to an extent, Xbox Live is going to help with doing this. You need those small independent people to think up crazy things because that's all they got going for them. They don't have these incredibly huge amounts of money to create these incredibly beautiful games with bloom lighting all over the damn place.
Right.
You know, you've got to have great ideas out there to make the games fun. And
right.
Unfortunately, you know, when you do have someone who's good and creative, a lot of times they'll pay to get that person into their company, and then they end up part of the company culture, and you start creating the same games over and over. Or
well,
that one.
To play devil's advocate. To play devil's advocate for a minute, you wouldn't say that a small developer being bought out by a larger developer maybe would give them a chance to continue the same thing but with a larger budget?
Well,
that's
exactly
that
right.
Guitar Hero and Red Octane being bought out by Activision?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're exactly right. They get bought out to do the same game over and over. Look
that's
at Katamari.
So now they said something, like with Guitar Hero, they said there was some news story that came out that said they're going to do like themed Guitar Heroes. Like in addition to Guitar Hero 2, we're going to get country Guitar Hero and maybe punk rock Guitar Hero and, you know, every sort of Guitar Hero.
It's the CSI.
As long as there's like a maybe if they could somehow get enough money to do just the Beatles Guitar Hero, I would buy that. I so badly want to play Helter Skelter, and at the end of stream, I got blisters on my fingers.
Maybe Activision's got, you know, the right amount of cash. Who knows? Anything's possible. You know, so yeah.
Oh, that wasn't a joke about Activision and Blizzard. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. But I really, in my opinion, I think that when a larger developer, or a publisher, I should say, buys a smaller developer, like Stan said, they're looking for the product that made that developer famous. And as such, the original spirit of the game that they made, which was, let's try something different, let's try something crazy, is pretty much lost in the translation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so what we're left with is kind of a shadow of what the company used to be. I mean, there are obviously exceptions to this rule. Again, you know, Will Wright still makes incredibly innovative games, even though he, you know, flies under the EA banner.
Right, but he's got the name to do it.
Very, very
like
true.
Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Same could be said for people like Sid Meier's.
Right.
You know, who his name's on the cover of every game he develops.
Mm-hmm.
But you know,
so he's kind of developed his own brand.
Right. But this is also a complaint of, you know, someone like American McGee, which, you know, is, you know, a lot of it is self-interest, but, you know, mm-hmm. he crusades basically for the small developers to make new, different games.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But a friend of mine who I think I mentioned on a podcast a week or two ago, works at this little developer called Neurotoxin, and he's very anti-working with, you know, big-name publishers like EA or Ubisoft, etc., because in his opinion, everything that a bigger publisher would have one of their in-house developers do trickles down from the indie arena, as I guess you could call it, and as such, when a developer enters a new publisher, they're kind of locked in the past. And that was something that he brought up quite a bit when I used to talk to him about it. So, yeah, that's just to give you one perspective on an indie studio looking at a new at a publisher. But, again, this is, of course, the Four Horsemen of the Gaming Apocalypse, so do you really think that this could lead to, you know, the end times, as you could call it?
Not by itself.
Yeah. You can't have an apocalypse with just one horseman.
Of course. Well, you could have a quasi-apocalypse.
But it would take, something like, you know, the purchasing of all these small devs just to make the same games and spin-offs of the same games, mm-hmm. you know, could lead to diluted games, which just end up being crappy, which I suppose...
But then again...
If
you think about it, the games that kind of, I'm not going to say charge the industry for because that implies, you know, innovation, but that, you know, drive most of the industry sales are not independent games. And they usually don't even start out as independent games.
Oh,
you know,
no.
Like your Zeldas, your Marios, your Maddens, these are not independent games. These are, you know, big studio, big publisher games.
Right.
So well, it's hard. It's while it's, I could definitely see it to being a problem. I don't think that it would put us on a course for gaming apocalypse.
Right.
No, because plenty of developers get bought out and, you know, continue to stay true to what they are.
Right. It's just it would just depend if you ended up starting to get too many crap games. I mean, granted, we have a lot of bad games out there. I mean, obviously, more.
Right.
You know, for every great game you get out there, you're going to have at least 52 bad ones.
Right.
I'm probably going to play half of them.
As sports editor, you are not, you don't have too many great games to choose from.
Hey, amazingly enough, not all my games have been sports. Remember, I did Zoo Tycoon DS because no one else wanted to.
That's right.
And I paid.
Well,
for
I mean, visiting zoos must be some kind of sport.
Oh man,
it's all that walking involved.
Oh,
and so do you guys? Would you guys agree that while it's a problem, it wouldn't lead us to the end of all that is.
Not alone.
It's a nice start, I think.
Of course, the second horseman of our gaming apocalypse is Pestilence, which would stand for crappy games. Now, this ties into our last one because we were talking about big publishers just putting out crappy game after crappy game after crappy game.
Or really diluted good ones.
Exactly. So, what do you guys think? Shadow the Hedgehog. Let's give Black Sonic a gun. Just let him run wild.
Yeah, make it a GTA Sonic. Everyone will love that.
Exactly.
Everyone loves a hot coffee.
Just release a hot hedgehog coffee mod, and it'll just the internet will explode.
God, I don't want to ever see anything.
Nope.
But get the ball rolling here. What would you say is the most industry-crushing bad game you guys have ever played?
Oh God!
Just off the top of your head.
My worst game so far, and this is not quite industry crushing, was Greg Hastings Tournament Pinball, but I can't imagine more than 5 copies.
Yeah,
so.
I don't think anyone bought Greg Hastings.
I got one.
You got one?
I owned a copy of E.T. for the Atari 2600.
So did I.
I got it as a birthday present or something.
Nice. I love that game. I did. Maybe it's because children are easy to please, but I love that game because it was E.T.
It's an exercise in torture is what it is.
I don't know, somehow I figured it out.
I own the original industry crushing game, I guess you could say.
Oh,
well, that game was released several years before I was born, so I missed out on it.
Oh, I owned both. I owned Pac-Man and E.T. for the 2600. Both.
Was it really that bad?
Okay, the problem with Pac-Man, besides it looking terrible, Pac-Man flashed across this. It was a disgusting game. But they made more Pac-Man cartridges than there were 2600s in existence.
Really?
Not just sold, but in existence.
That doesn't make any sense.
Way to go, Atari.
Have legs. Game's going to have crazy legs.
Now, were Pac-Man and E.T. pre-84? I don't recall.
Yeah.
They were.
Because E.T. did not come out when I was one. So yeah.
No, E.T. the game, I came out either in 83 or 84.
No way, really?
Maybe it came out with the movie in 82. It could have been 82.
You know what? Let's check the almighty Wikipedia.
Good idea. Because my memory was a little hazy back then. I was only like 6.
But I was like 1, and I remember owning it. That seems very odd. Maybe my parents bought it, and then I played it years later.
Well, it became very cheap very quickly.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Aha! E.T., a 1982 video game based on the movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
The year before I was born.
Yeah, he was rushed into making it.
He had something like two, three weeks, so he
was just like hopped up
like
on cocaine the entire time.
It was a 6-month production schedule, but of course, you know, you have to take duplication and debugging into account. So in the end, he had something like maybe a month to code the thing.
Exactly.
And it was the game with Yar's Revenge, which was a very good game.
Yeah.
You know. So you could say that because these games were pre-84, they were the reason that the game industry fell. They were that crushing.
They're the two main ones.
Right.
You know, you got E.T. buried in a heap in, like, New Mexico or Arizona.
it's in Area 51 somewhere.
Yeah.
But, getting back to it, I can probably think of one or two industry-crushing games from, you know, the modern video game era. At least industry-crushing for me that just made me not want to play games for a while. One of them was, believe it or not, Beautiful Joe, Red Hot Rumble.
No way! Oh, okay.
Red Hot Rumble.
Okay.
Yeah, Beautiful Joe. Oh, because Beautiful Joe is one of my favorite games ever. And so the fact that Red Hot Rumble took what was my favorite video game franchise at the time and just pushed its face into the ground, I just said, maybe this hobby needs a rest.
How about GTA clones?
GTA, which one?
All of them.
Clones.
What?
Dead to Rights, True Crime, Saints Row.
Dead to Rights was just a third-person shooter, but...
Wasn't it a GTA?
I don't know. It was just a third-person shooter.
It looked like
shooter.
More. I never played it.
No, just a guy and his dog running around shooting people. Pardon?
The dog was based on CJ from San Andreas. That's what I understand. Even though it came out before San Andreas, so that makes no sense.
If you want to talk about, I didn't think San Andreas was very good. I thought Vice City was a far superior game.
I don't know.
See, I had a problem with the GTA just because of the control scheme. I never got into. I every time I tried to run away, you know, I'm very intense when I play, so my thumb would constantly be pressing down on the left analog stick. So I'd always be running from the cops, ducking, because it's also the duck button, and then I just get blown away, and I'm like,
nice.
Oh!
But man, I just thought of something. What, say, perchance, the Wii doesn't take off? I mean, obviously we know it will be, but, you know, in a hypothetical, unrealistic world, say these games all were, like, really, really gimmicky. And this was the norm. That might, in fact, start because of all these crappy gimmick games, you know, air quotes. You might see a kind of see people who kind of like walk away from video games for a while. But of course, we know that Wii games will be great, so that's not really a problem. How much are they paying me? How many times have I mentioned on this podcast that my salary is astounding?
I mean, geez,
can you not see all of the Nintendo gear in my room? That, you know,
are you one of those guys they pay to like pretend to be real and post on message boards like
you're
a real person? But you
Comcast did is actually several different people. We're a team that writes for several places.
That would
same goes for Mad Casa Messina, I think his name is. Zazmafraz, whatever.
Casa Sasquatch.
That's not really fair because my name isn't exactly easy to pronounce either. So, don't worry, Matt. I know the struggle. Well, we're getting way off topic. You're talking about Mad Casa, whatever.
But the thing is, what about? Do you think there's a possibility that the 360 and the PS3 could have priced themselves out of the market? Thus, if there are crap games out there, people will stop purchasing them because there's no word of mouth to keep the purchase going.
Well, I don't think I don't really think it's that. I think of it's more of that as the game price rises, even for a crappy game, like whatever crappy game is going to come out when the PS3 comes out, it'll be $60, $70, and people will have to start justifying their purchase more. The realm of budget games is going to shrink drastically, and it's going to move entirely to online distribution, where you get things that are very small, that cost maybe $5, and the whole mid-range $20 game market is completely wiped out.
Yeah.
That's very true, because, you know, what's it called? Budget games on the 360 now, I think, what's the budget price, like $40?
Yeah.
I mean, that's hardly budget, if you ask me.
You look at games on the shelf, you can definitely see something like, you know, Ford Motorsport Racing, you know. Like, that is the kind of game that sticks out to me, that this game was made and costs $20 at release, and it knows exactly what market it is sitting in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And because, you know, people, like you said, you know, people are going to be a lot more cautious about which games they buy. A crappy game just is going to die out, but wouldn't that be a good thing?
Maybe, unless all they're buying is crap games, or maybe not crap games, but games that are just diluted, like,
let's call them budget titles, to be nice.
Yeah, I suppose. What happens when all anyone is ever purchasing anymore is GTA, or, the latest licensed game, or Madden, you know? As much as I love Madden...
I don't think that people would put up for that.
You know, eventually it's gonna get old.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, people would...
No, they can always make those helmets a little shinier.
Right.
Of course. Now we can render the player's cup in stunning detail. Our next horseman is FAMIN, which stands for lack of creativity in the gaming industry.
Oh, and
which
there
of course
a lot
brings
of
up the there's the question of how important innovation is. And
yeah.
On a scale from 1 to 10, and why, how important is innovation to you guys?
7.
Stan, why don't you go first?
I go with
Obi. I already went with 7.
Yeah, Obi already said 7. I go with 7 because innovation is important to keep it fresh, but innovation doesn't keep it going. What keeps it going is basically familiarity.
Mm-hmm. Like, you can teach an old dog new tricks, but you could also teach him how to refine a trick that he has already learned and then he's doing better.
Right.
So you
and then there are always those tried and true formulas.
Exactly. Like Super Mario Brothers.
You know, or, you know, Dungeons and Zelda, for example.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll be seeing anything like Zelda Prime Hunters anytime soon.
Well, there was Four Swords.
There was
four
that's
swords
true. There was
sort of
Four
that.
Swords.
Right.
And there was kind of then there was that other spin-off Tetris Trackers. Which
yeah,
I don't remember much about. What was that?
I don't think it came to the U.S.
I don't think it came out ever.
It came out in Japan, but
it
was not released in the U.S.
And it got poor reviews, I believe.
Wasn't that like Donkey Kong's Coconut Crackers or something?
I think Tetra hides rupees all over the ocean to torture you, and so you have to find them.
Yeah.
Oh.
And she speaks to you, and it's wonderful.
Oh,
and no one really wanted it anyway.
I always wondered why Tetra became several degrees paler when she became Zelda.
Yeah.
That always struck me.
And I always wondered why she lost her like her edge. Like, she became a total sissy once she became Zelda.
I don't know. It's the dress.
You know what it is? It's Prince Adam He-Man syndrome. When Prince Adam became He-Man, his voice lowered, he no longer wore pink, and he got a tan. But once he went back to Prince Adam, he was that kind of wussy guy.
That works for me.
Again, that was before my time, so.
Yeah, well, that explains your Zelda phenomenon right there.
Yeah, you know, the original Zelda came out, again, several years before I was born, and I tried playing, and I don't like it. I'm sorry.
I didn't like Zelda for the longest time.
Oh, man, Zelda was the first game I really fell in love with. I remember.
I didn't like Zelda until Ocarina of Time. But I'm not one of those, like, Ocarina kids or anything. Like, I'm not like, oh my god. But that was just the first one I really cared about, because I wasn't into that style of gaming until Ocarina came out, really.
Mm.
I didn't play, like, a single RPG growing up as a kid. I mean, I know Zelda's not an RPG, but...
See,
it's more of a action-adventure.
Adventure.
Yeah, and my favorite game on the Atari 2600, and yes, I'm old enough to have been really into the 2600, was Adventure. And to me, Legend of Zelda was like,
game.
Oh my god, this is so much better than Adventure. I mean, look at these graphics. And
it's like Adventure, but with a character instead of a dot.
And when you saw...
I think it was, wasn't it? Wasn't it just a square block?
Yeah, it was a little block with an arrow that was supposed to be a sword, and he fought ducks that were supposed to be dragons. And it was a great, stupid game.
Excellent. But getting back to innovation, as that's the name of the game at the moment.
Right.
I would put innovation even lower than you guys. I would put it at a 5.
Oh.
Well, you're off the podcast.
I'm off...
Obviously.
I'm going to get an email from Johnny saying, we thought you were hardcore when we hired you, but it appears that you suck, so, sorry.
Go back to your GTA clones.
I know. I don't even know what
to do for you, buddy.
Seriously, I'm so screwed. Now whenever I write a review now, we're just going like, well, whatever, you didn't even play all the way through the original Zelda, so your opinion is obviously void.
That's okay. I'm going to get enough crap about the last podcast and everything I hate.
Oh, yeah. But again, we'll leave that to the talkback goons.
Okay.
Innovation, I would put it at a 5 because a lot of, you know, so-called innovative games, I don't really care for them.
Well, you seem to really like Killer 7.
I do, but it's not so much innovative as it is just really, really interesting.
No, that's definitely innovative in an artistic sense.
Yeah. But like not in the gameplay sense. It's really it's a first person shooter on
rails.
Rail
shooter.
Right.
Yeah, a rail shooter. Yeah.
That's true.
So I mean, it's not in that sense. It's not really so much of a gameplay achievement. It's this. It's a story that keeps the game going. I mean, in my review, I kind of just said it's target practice, the game, but with a really good story.
So it also helps that you were smoking PCP at the time.
Of course. Well, again, I do live in Miami, and as such, many, many, many drugs come through my house from time to time.
That's what you get for being a drug mule.
It happens. It happens, you know. That's how I pay for my games now. That and you know, stealing games from the PGC vault.
The explanation for your income is starting to come in bit by bit.
Uh-oh.
He just keeps trading in all those games based on hit movies. Hey, that's the only way I had games for a little while.
How's that 50 Cent game, man?
Never came out on GameCube. I would have reviewed it. But, you know, one of the biggest contributors to my DS was Batman Begins.
Ooh.
Believe it or not. And you know, a host of other sort of bad games, including Red Hot Rumble. So it did prove its worth after all.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I would... Go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering, you know, a lot of, in terms of this innovation, is getting us a lot of these non-games, like, you know, Brain Age... And does that turn off the hardcore gamer or the regular gamer at all?
They
the casual
they
gamer?
They don't pay any attention to it.
I don't think it turns off the hardcore.
Yeah, but a hardcore gamer is not going to stop buying, I don't know, what's really a hardcore game? Like, I can't think of one off the top of my head. I don't know.
Ghost and Goblins?
Ghost and Goblins?
No one's going to stop buying Ghosts and Goblins because Brain Age is also on the shelf. That doesn't make any sense. They're just not going to buy it because it's not for them.
Right.
I mean, my mom loves Brain Age, but that doesn't mean I'm going to not buy whatever the next Silicon Knights game is. Well, actually, I probably won't buy that game. But
I mean, it could get better. Dennis, two humans
I love
for Nintendo
Silicon
Nyack.
I love Silicon Knights, but...
Going back to Brain Age, I actually, for my review, I asked my mom to try and play it just to kind of get the whole perspective, and she didn't like it.
Yeah.
My mom loves it.
It irritates my parents that Blue was never understood.
Yeah. That's what eventually made her say, forget it, I have to go back to doing my lesson plan.
I just told my parents, click on I can't speak, and, you know, boom, problem.
There you
fixed.
That's the end of that chapter.
Yeah.
But as for innovation, I mean, I think that there is some sort of overlap between non-games and hardcore games. You know, mostly in the Nintendo fold, because a lot of Nintendo gamers will just buy whatever game Nintendo publishes. Nintendo game.
That's such a silly thing to do.
True.
Exactly.
And then it doesn't work out. It's weird how it works out a lot of times, but then some games just don't end up selling, period. Like, big games, like Metroid Prime 2 Echoes, from what I understand, was not a huge... Just kind of fell off the radar. And I think Geist sold something like, what, 12,000 copies? Like, total?
Geist was decent. Geist got a lot of hate that it didn't deserve, and a good amount of hate that it did deserve.
Yeah, the problem with also Metroid Prime 2 was not a whole lot of people were ready for it, and Metroid Prime itself was actually a bit of a disappointment. Remember, it was a big thing, you know, which one was going to win out, Splinter Cell or Metroid Prime? And Splinter Cell.
Wait, when did that happen?
Ass.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I don't remember that even happening because Splinter Cell was way better than Metroid from the start.
Was there ever a race between Splinter Cell?
Yeah,
and
there was
Metroid
a little
Prime
bit of one. There was like, you know, because the
Didn't
Splinter
Cell come out in 2003?
No, they both came out at the same time. Xbox. And GameCube at that point were pretty much neck and neck. And with Xbox having a little bit of an upper hand. And its big killer app that holiday season was Splinter Cell. And Nintendo's big killer app was going to be Metroid Prime. And Metroid Prime didn't sell anywhere near the numbers of Splinter Cell.
Nintendo's killer app is always some niche title, like Metroid. Like,
right.
Who's going to buy that
I thought the GameCube's killer app was Melee. I mean, that's what it was for me.
That's all it's got.
Right. its real killer app was Melee. It was huge. Everyone loved it.
I mean, I still play Melee. I think I played it earlier today. I'm not even joking. Like, Melee is one of my favorite games on the GameCube.
That was a great game.
So, I eagerly await Brawl. But,
especially me. I'm a big Metal Gear Solid fanboy.
Oh, right, because of the whole snake thing. Showtime!
Oh, yeah.
But in any case, innovation is something that I think is, necessary in the long run. But as far as driving people, this game is not innovative, I'm going to leave games. The amount of people who would think that way is such a niche audience.
I think it's more that we have to worry that the developers are going to start thinking about that. Like, if a developer is always stuck making a game based on the latest movies, he's going to think, oh man, I can't do anything with this crap. I quit.
Well, I mean, a game doesn't have to be...
I think that's very big.
Well, I mean, you can be not... You can opt out of being innovative and still make a fun game that isn't license-related, like, New Super Mario Bros. Again. So...
Yeah, but that's Nintendo. I'm talking about regular Joe developer who needs to make that licensed game to stay afloat.
Oh, you mean like, like a Harry Potter developer?
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Like, they're all going to quit. Those guys don't want to be making those games, of course, but because they don't have the money not to.
And they sure don't want me reviewing them, I know that.
That'll always be my go-to developer in trouble game. Harry Potter DS will always be my go-to developer that guy's in trouble game.
Poor guy.
And everything I always do, but getting back to innovation again, because we go off on tangents so much in Nintendo Pirate Radio, it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
radio-free Nintendo.
Radio, whatever.
Hey, Evan's not here, man.
Evan's not here. We don't need to have this fight again.
But
because, as in Highlander, there can only be one.
Right, and as you said, innovation. It's necessary, but it's not completely necessary to keep it going. However, if you lose it completely and you have that dearth of creativity, then you get that third horseman there.
Oh, obviously. I mean,
fourth horseman.
Oh, well, that's the third one, but then you start getting the fourth one, which comes around and, well.
Sure, let's just shift right over to death. Now, to be clear for all of our readers out there, this stands for gamer apathy. So what does this mean?
Basically, the death comes when, after the other three horsemen, you got, the small devs are bankrupt, which leads to a dearth of creativity, which leads to crap games flooding the market. And the casual gamer no longer cares. And they're the ones who drive the industry, because the hardcore will always be there, because that's what we do. We love these things. This is our hobby.
Of course. So it's kind of like these three other horsemen combine in Transformers,
like Voltron.
Sequences. Exactly. Exactly. And then they form the ultimate Omega horseman, death, which is, this. So basically saying people see all this crap, but they don't want to put up with it, so they move out. Find something else to play.
But they're putting up with it right now.
They're putting up... Yeah, but...
Like, someone out there buying Ford Motorsports Racing and Monster Truck Rally 86. Like, people are out there buying those games, so I'm not sure if this horseman...
Yeah, but I mean, they're not huge hits. It's not like, Ford Motor Racing or whatever sold a million copies.
Yeah, and it's also when they start flooding the market with games that they think people will want, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I would say that I'm not going to say that, because that's going to make me sound stupid, but a lot of bad game purchases are by relatives who buy you games as presents.
It's a video game.
Or whatever. Like, exactly, and they don't know anything about video games.
Well, okay.
And that's happened to me quite a few times. I remember one Christmas in particular, my great aunt got me this one of those, not plug-in and play things, but it was like it looked kind of like a rocket ship. I mean, I was 14 at the time. I mean, jeez. And it played like really bad versions of Tetris and I think Breakout.
Wow. Impressive.
Yeah.
She should have just gotten me one of those pirated emulators and a controller that they sell on the mall.
Exactly. Like, what were those SNES controllers? Like the Super Joy controllers from Lixang?
Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
Could have been worse, though. Anyway, could have been. She got you the Big Mother Truckers.
No, it gets worse, though. Here's the worst part. It has a built-in alarm that goes off every 5 seconds that plays Beethoven's Fifth. That's it. No lie.
What?
This is the most useless thing ever.
I'm not joking about that in any sense of the word. That is just quoted for truth.
Yeah, I suppose if I had a lot of games like that, I would quit. I'd say, you know what, I'm done. No more gaming.
I'm pretty sure there's a holiday video of me crushing it with a mallet.
Well, that was the end of that.
Why I hate Beethoven.
I hope this aunt is not listening to this podcast.
Yeah. No, probably not. She can barely recognize a computer.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah. So, anyway. And she got me some nice shirts, so it's awesome.
That's cool.
So if all games were like that, I don't know if I would still be, playing games, let alone reviewing them.
Yeah. I have not played a video game in a little while now because there's just nothing out that I care about.
Yeah, I mean, I've only got a DS and a GameCube, and so, the DS has kind of had a sucky summer.
Yeah.
And the GameCube
care about is, GameCube is dead.
Yeah, I mean, GameCube is business as usual,
Yeah.
Yeah, dead.
The only game I'm looking forward to and sadly not reviewing is Final Fantasy III. For the
only game I'm looking forward to right now is Guitar Hero 2.
Really?
Yeah.
What about all these great DS games coming out in the fall and the winter?
Yeah, maybe I'll get some of them.
Yeah.
Guitar Hero 2.
I mean, the game that I'm looking forward to most right now is Heroes for Wii.
Yeah.
Because, of course, I am a huge fan of Killer 7.
And great voice acting.
And, yeah, great voice acting. Tsuda-san knows what he's doing, damn it. He knows it, Stan. He knows what he's doing with that trailer. It's psychological. I'm telling you, man. It's supposed to get in your head.
Yeah.
Oh, and it does.
Anyway, and also Contact, which is also from Grasshopper.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which Evan loved when he...
Evan will not shut up about.
Yeah, he played at E3, and I was reading his impressions. I'm like, awesome. So, yeah, and I think he actually signed up to do a secondary review. I think that's how much he really likes it.
I haven't kept on top of Contact, so I really don't know a whole lot about it.
I don't know. So
I'm looking forward to
Go listen to episode one or two, or episode two of the podcast is like half about Contact. So go back and listen to that.
Unfortunately, the game does not have Goichi Suda as a director. He's not even involved with the game at all. Which came as a huge, huge disappointment to me because I thought it was Goichi Suda's big DS outing, but unfortunately, no.
Well, you're just
then
a big Suda fan.
There's that rumor. Then there is that rumor that he's working on he's working with Hideo Kojima on a Wii game, which is not true.
I don't believe that one for a second.
But let me believe.
Certainly exciting though.
Let me believe.
Believe.
I think I read it on Go Nintendo or something.
Oh, well.
Well,
you know it's true.
Exact quoted for truth from Go Nintendo. It also showed up on MySpace and Kotaku, so we know it's good.
Yeah, I mean, if it's on Kotaku, right?
Yeah.
No. Exactly.
Yeah, maybe next time you'll see it, it'll be in Inquirer.
Oh, and a note to the editors / bloggers of Kotaku. If you made up that Wii Parties thing, I will find you and I will hunt you down. Because that thing is coming to Miami and I better freaking be there.
Well, if you do get invited, let me know. I will make a special trip down there.
I would not be surprised if it happened. It's just like the Cube Clubs.
Yeah. I mean,
They held one of those in Tallahassee, of all places.
Really? They probably said, it's the capital of Florida. We'll just put it there.
I think they did it because it's a college town, but I'm surprised they didn't do Gainesville.
Yeah, maybe.
You know,
Tallahassee.
You got Florida State University. That's a pretty big school.
That's right. Yeah, they pay me, so you know, go Florida State.
I will be applying there for this upcoming fall. So
that's cool.
Yeah, go
neighbors.
Go SSU.
Cool.
Anyway, so yeah, you know, if all of these things came together, you know, the three horsemen whose names I will now refresh myself with because I've already forgotten them.
War.
I got it. We got War. War being the small developers going bankrupt and being bought out.
Pestilence,
the crap games. Famine, the dearth of creativity. And then
finally,
consumer apathy.
Now, I want to end the podcast because I know we're running a little long here. But I have one final question for you guys.
Yeah.
Do you think that in the foreseeable future, which, you know, isn't necessarily limited by any amount of time, just in the foreseeable future, do you think the video game industry will face a dramatic turn for the worst or possibly, you know, Armageddon?
In the near future? No.
In the foreseeable future. This could be, you know, 20 years down the line.
Of course. I absolutely do believe that there will be eventually a crash sometime.
I know.
No, I mean, not eventually, but I mean, like, you start to see the wheels in motion now that could possibly lead later, much later down the road, into a, you know, a crash.
No, there are some bad things like, Xbox and PlayStation 2 possibly pricing themselves out of the mass market range, but... You know, with Nintendo possibly picking up that slack, it's not, you know, there's not any lack of hope, and, you know.
I wouldn't call it a crash so much as a recession, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
It could always just turn out to be, a world where people just don't have the money to spend their excess cash on luxuries like video games.
Well, and I think that's why
especially when they get more expensive.
Right, and I think that's why Nintendo made the focus on the Wii on keeping it inexpensive. Because if they just let it go the route of, you know, just basically expanding your hard drive and putting in a better graphics card, and it's going to put the strain on the developers because they need to develop a game that utilizes that kind of memory. You're going to create a way that there's not going to be enough games on the market to even justify purchasing these consoles.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing about the Wii, is it keeps the mass market in mind, and that's what's going to keep gaming alive, or that kind of thought will keep gaming alive right now.
Well, you heard it here, first, folks, in the dystopian war future where we all live on the streets, we'll all be playing Nintendo games.
Well, yeah, because they make good handheld ones.
Yes.
Exactly. We'll all be playing our DS SPs.
DS Lite SP, DSL SP, right.
And I'll still complain about people who snake in Mario Kart.
Feel free. I'll just keep learning how to.
Yes. Not cheating is pure skill.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. So I believe this brings us to a close, so... This is Carl Castaneda signing off. As usually with me is Stan Ferguson, and of course the man who started it all, Mike Sklens.
It's been a pleasure having you, Mr. Sklens.
Yes, thank you.
All right, hopefully so this is another
with
volume.
Many people.
Oh yeah, I definitely. So this is another volume.
Once Evan gets his Mac, then we can do four people.
Yes, Evan. Seriously, man, where's the cash? Come on.
Yeah, but, he's been saying he's going to be getting a Mac. Any day now.
Like
2 months.
Dude, it's okay. It's coming, man. It's coming. And then 6 months later. Yeah. So, Evan, how's your Mac doing?
And I was the one who was like, next year.
Exactly, man. You're the one who's like,
tomorrow.
I'm going to go for this complex set of bank accounts and various credit card scams that will eventually, maybe in about 5 years, get me a new Mac. And then you just end up getting one.
Yep.
Well, it was your fault, dude. We were doing a recording, then bam, it fell on the floor.
And it fell on the floor, and then you had to get a new laptop. Yeah.
Like, might as well get it back.
All right.
Welcome to the family.
Thank you.
So this is another volume of Nintendo Pirate Radio.
Radio Free Nintendo.
It's a special edition of Radio Free Nintendo, also known as Nintendo Pirate Radio.
Yarr!
The end. All right.
Good night.